You are listening to Radiant Creators, a collaborative project composed of people whose passion, purpose, and dedication requires forging their own unique path of empowerment and livelihood. A Radiant Creator isn't making a living, they are living.
Welcome to Radiant Creators. Tonight we have Thomas Sheridan on the show, and we're catching back up with him. It's been, I think, at least a year since we talked last, and that show was great. So we're going to catch up on some new stuff that Thomas is doing. And recently he started putting out psychic weather reports, and these have really struck me. I think these are amazing. And then the 2020 psychic weather preview just came out, and that was really rocking. And I thought, man, I just love to talk to Thomas about this. Sent him a note, and he said, sure, let's do it. So Thomas, welcome to the show. By the way, we're not live, we're recording this. And with that said, can you tell us about how the psychic weather reports came to be? Because this is something new, and I think it's really powerful.
Hi, Craig. It's good to be back. Yeah, well, it's kind of like intuition taken into a useful tool, really. I mean, the internet can be very useful for things like that. You can gauge things like mass hysteria or people being relaxed on a level, or you can gauge people who are agitated by a news story or this kind of thing. And I noticed that there was almost like a weather pattern effect to it, in the sense that if there was an event happening and how people reacted to it was often always the same. For instance, if there was some kind of new messiah was brought forward for people who have this belief in that some kind of Christian finalization for humanity, that a savior will return, even if they're secular and not Christian at all, they still have this need for a messiah. Whether it was Russell Brand or Edward Snowden or Greta Thunberg or any other celebrity that came forward with some stupid platitude, and the people would react, the same type of people would react the same kind of way every time. It was almost like a kind of an observation of a Pavlovian conditioning within a certain segment of people. As a result, I started to like use that to create data sets, in the sense that if they react to that particular stimuli in that way, would they react to other things such as the threat of war or some kind of event in the news that had an element of doom to it? And again, not always the same kind of people, but a certain demographic would react in exactly the same way, in an almost dissociated manner, in that, for instance, they may have like 5 years ago followed Russell Brand like a Pied Piper, believing that he was going to lead them towards spiritual socialism and utopia. And then when they find out that he was just basically a shill for the Labour Party in the UK and was building himself a new age career, you think that they would learn from that. But no, the next one comes along, and the next one comes along, and the same people fall for it over and over again. Tommy Robinson, Greta Thunberg, it doesn't matter. Just give them a savior. They're happy. Give them something that validates that. And that's where it came from.
Yeah, that's really the way to see the world, I think, where we witness, but we don't indulge. Because I think that to have sanity, you really, of course, you need to see what's going on. We all have interests, like, hey, what's the news? What's going on? But in watching the psychic weather reports, I think it's teaching people how to process what they're seeing and then see the far greater reaching, you know, reality behind it. Do you feel like you're teaching people how to really perceive, let's just say, the mainstream media and all the memes that are out there, like Brand, Snowden, and Greta?
Yeah, absolutely. They're useful, these things, because you can then tell that this is a repeated pattern, and therefore the result will be something else. So, for instance, you know something else is coming. It's almost like this is a kind of it's a lot like a kind of the magician on the stage, magician who says, "Can I have a volunteer for the audience?" And they will all always tell you that the person who is the most impulsive looking, and in the old days when people used to smoke in the audience, the one who was chain smoke, the one who's generally most impulsive. And they would look at their direction and say, can I have a volunteer from the audience? And the same thing applies to psychological and behaviors of the psyche. It's the exact same thing. You look for the ones who are impulsively drawn in by these things. And then you find out, well, there's an end game to it, because it's not only me that has figured this out, but the control grid, as a matter of fact, has actually figured out how to use them. And so other things as well, like religions and so on like this. And therefore, you can predict the next move. And where this became super apparent for me was when Trump got elected, because it was absolute mad hysteria among the mainstream. And that told me that they hadn't got a plan B. The plan was for Hillary Clinton to become U.S. president and then follow a certain format. But the fact was, he won the election, and that they did not have a way to respond to it. So they were thrown into chaos. And that's also a useful way of gathering data on these things too, because when their things don't go wrong, they usually attack. And therefore, if you see something, like it's the whole thing, if you see them attacking something, you ask yourself, why are they attacking this individual or this idea? If they're pushing it, you ask yourself, why are they pushing it? And eventually you will come to conclusions based on their past behavior. It's almost like criminal profiling. You will come up with, you will be able to see what the agenda is. And this is the useful thing about these psychic weather reports, is that I only put them out there to keep people grounded about things. When things happen in the media, particularly the mainstream media, don't jump on it one way or another that it's a terrible thing or a great thing. Stop, observe, and ask yourself, what is the end game?
Well, the way you put that is great. Volunteer from the audience. So when you look at a Russell Brand or a Snowden or a Greta, that's a great way to visualize them. The volunteer from the audience, you know, who looks the most malleable. So in the psychic weather report, something I noticed recently, because I think this is just my way of seeing things too, a little bit psychic weather reporty. When I try to view the media the same way, and tell me what you think of this. Something that seemed to be a connection was, so you had the Iranian general Soleimani, I think his name is, recently. So after he was blown up, all there was in the media was this picture of his hand with a ring on it. And that was just about the same time where the Pope got, you remember that video that came out recently of the Pope, he was smacking away a woman's hand who grabbed him?
Yes.
And then, after that, then a bunch of videos came out on the internet of him being disgusted, kind of repulsed by people kissing, wanting to kiss his ring, and him pulling his hand away. And somehow that focus on his hand and his ring, and then, of course, the Soleimani guy and his hand and his ring being all we see, it seemed to me like, I can't quite put my finger on it, but that seemed to have, there's more to that than meets the eye. It represents something. I'm just waiting for it to come to me exactly what it is.
Well, it may not be deliberate. You have to understand that these people who are in the mainstream media are just as vulnerable to the symbolisms and the archetypes as any of us. And they may have been instinctually drawn to that image for some reason of the big bling ring. Now, it is very strange. I don't get it either. And then you have the thing with the Pope and his hand. I mean, I'm a great believer in that the world ultimately is a feedback loop of, you know, probability factors of events and visual things and stuff like that, that tell you of things coming or things happening. I've been talking for years about how people do see flying objects in the sky, and we call them UFOs today, but this has been going on forever, during periods of great stress. It's the same thing. It's almost like the subconscious is, we're going into a very deep thing here, that the subconscious is telling us, pay attention, observe, this means something, there's something going on here. And I don't, people will be inclined to say, well, look at this, the ring is put there by the elites to give us a message. Now, why the guy who gets himself blown up by a missile, have a sport a ring like that? Why did they find that picture? I think subconsciously they do it, just like the human subconscious mind is a tremendously powerful thing that doesn't get enough respect, and it doesn't operate in the same space-time continuum that our conscious mind does, and therefore it has foreshadowing or flashes of the future. And because the subconscious mind, whether it be personal or collective, doesn't speak in the language of words or text, but in this language of symbols, will show us something that means something that's coming down the road. Now, a classic one of that would be the 9/11 thing. You have all these people saying, oh, it was the Illuminati and this is how they blew the whistle. No, they didn't do this. This is a great misunderstanding. If people need to read we read like Man and His Symbols by Carl Jung, or you notice that these things exist to tell us that an event is coming that will affect human consciousness very deeply. And so, the famous thing of Bart Simpson holding up the 9/11 on the bus ticket poster. I mean, this is not an accident. This is the subconscious mind preparing us for some kind of eruption. And we see this too with this ring. Now, I would like to know more about that ring, what it is and what it represents. But it was so funny. Here's my theory, okay, on the whole thing. This is kind of does tie in. This current pope, who remember is the first Jesuit pope, has been obsessed with, shall we say, healing the divide with Islam to the point where he's told, it's quite remarkable what this guy has done. He basically, for starters, he attacks pagans. This is the most amazing thing, how much he attacks pagans. And there's all sorts of weird stuff like that going on in the Vatican at the moment regarding pagan idols and rejection of pagan saints in this kind, pagan deities in this kind of thing. And the Pope takes his hand away from a woman who grabs it, slaps it. She did yank it fairly hard, to be honest, but his reaction was so visceral, it wasn't because of pain. A person who feels pain does not slap out at someone who holds them. They go, ouch, and they pull it away, and then they will say, sorry, I have a sore hand. He had an autopheral impulse. He was frightened. He wasn't in pain. He was terrified. It was almost like that woman's hand had said something to him or to his subconscious mind that he didn't want to hear. Like that movie, The Dead Zone, with Christopher Walken, how he could hold people's hands and tell the future. I think this guy is, the Vatican is in extreme trouble at the moment. They're trying so hard to be woke and politically correct in every sense that there's almost like no point in being a Catholic anymore. You might as well just go back to being a pagan, or just become a lay Catholic who just believes the stuff and has no intention no desire to communicate with the church as a whole. This is what seems to be happening. Then this guy is attacked in wearing the same ring and blown up with a missile. At the same time, the Pope and the Vatican are desperate to mollycoddle the Islamic world, possibly with a merger in the future, because these people think in centuries. They don't think in like decades or years. And so I think if I was to put an uneducated guess on all this, I would say it's all to do, in that case, with the collapse of both the Catholic Church and radical Islam. I think both of them were seeing them. Now, when I say the Catholic Church, I mean the Vatican power structure. But we're seeing both of them now in the decline. And that was probably why that ring was prominent in both those events. Iran is a Persian country. It is called Persia even to themselves. These are Persian people. These were a people who were basically conquered. People very similar to Europeans in terms of their culture and their glorious past in the creation of civilization were conquered by Islam. And you see, you're already seeing the ripples now. They're not walking through the streets screaming death to America. It's changed. Things have changed radically. And they're getting fed up with the Ayatollahs. And the same thing is happening with the Catholics. They're getting fed up with the Vatican. And we may be seeing the end of the two most powerful evangelical religions on the face of the planet. And this is what I would see, and that we're actually seeing the beginning of the end. And that reaction by the Pope pulling his hand away, that was almost like it was his soul that hurt rather than his hand.
That makes sense. Especially, I wonder how the Pope would feel if he felt devotion through that woman's hand, like true unconditional faith and love. That would be something I think, well, personally, would unsettle him. You know, just that pure belief and faith and love. I mean, I think that's not, in my opinion, what he's about. So it would not surprise me that that would actually cause him physical pain, you know?
Same kind of idea. It's that, he's being confronted by his own shadow in the form of an ordinary person. She could have also been a pagan as well. You heard about that thing of the Pachamama effigy that was thrown into the River Tiber, taken from a church of the Virgin Mary. Suddenly they found that the churches around the Vatican were full of pagan idols, and someone connected probably to the Pizzo family started taking them out and throwing them into the river. And at the same time, a statue of an ancient goddess, Diana, emerges from the river. It's just, there's some strange, very, very strange, funny stuff going on. It's almost like, I don't know, a surrealist movie we're living in at the moment.
Absolutely. And then you get into the Arthurian legends and the Lady of the Lake. I mean, what happens if Diana shows up one day and there's a sword, you know? He's holding a sword. Somebody puts a sword by that statue and it's ancient and no one can figure where it came from. Now that's when things get real, as if they're not real already. Well, one thing I wanted to mention that the psychic weather reports remind me of, just this, there's a quote from Marcus Aurelius, and he says, "The object of life is not to be on the side of the majority, but to escape finding oneself in the ranks of the insane."
Yep.
And they're a way, and I think that's really, the psychic weather reports are a way to get what Marcus was saying.
Yeah, I'm not giving anyone the answers to life. I'm just saying to them, hold on, take another look at it. Relax. Check it out. And that's really what that is about. Because they want people rattled. They want people insane. They want people confused. They want people essentially in a state where they're begging them for the next answer.
Yeah, I definitely want to touch on that in a little bit. I was going to ask you about the multiple choice generation. Like, we've been working on that. That's been the education system for quite a while, rather than having essay answers where you defend your point. How do you come to this, etc. It's just a matter of, well, choose the right or the wrong answer. So we really have a multiple choice, lacking creativity culture right now. But before we talk about that, you did mention in the 2020 Psychic Weather Report, you mentioned that left-wing politics, Marxism, and socialism are being consigned to the gutter, being very 20th century. And I think I'm glad to say that, and I can feel it. But at the same time, I feel like here in America, we are really challenged by that right now, because it seems that socialism, and then of course our ideal of the sovereign individual and the Constitution, are really butting heads. I mean, the Constitution is not as relevant as it once was in America because a lot of people don't like it. They don't believe in it. If one was to watch the Democratic Socialist Convention where the kids were calling each other comrade and don't use male and female pronouns and such, I just wonder how you feel about that psychic weather-wise. I mean, because to me it seems like I'd love to see him on the way out, but it really seems like we are just butting heads right now between, you know, the sovereignty of the individual and socialism in this country.
Well, it's the same in Europe. This is the lunatic fringe. People have to remember that. These ones who are shouting, the first to shout racist, the first to shout homophobe or transphobe or all these things, the ones with the biggest mouths, we have to remember Extinction Rebellion and the rest of them. These are a lunatic fringe. They're not in the main. However, they have a tremendous amount of power only for one reason, that's political correctness and progressive politics. Has made it in a situation where someone will say, you know, shut the fuck up, I got to live my life, you'll be called a name. That could actually cost you your job, could cost you your career, could cost you lots of things, your social circle. And we've been well trained through things like you people on YouTube having their channels cancelled because they had controversial topics. The same thing with Facebook and everywhere else. You get a ban for nothing. I told I tell jokes on Facebook all the time. That's one of the things I love to do, is to cheer people up by telling jokes. And I told a paddy joke, you know, about an Irish guy, and I got a 30-day ban for being racist against myself. And that's the kind of nonsense that we're dealing with, you know. And they've modified people very well. But I feel that stuff is all very fleeting, Craig. I would not get too wrapped into thinking that this is going to be the end game. We're dealing with a lunatic fringe that has fleeting power right now. And it's not going to last. Like, I'm absolutely convinced that a lot of this progressive, woke, and politically correct culture, even the most, should we say, docile citizens, are eventually going to get sick of it. Just like they got sick of the casual racism that used to exist in the 70s. It's the same thing. Nothing is ever written in stone in terms of a permanence of an idea. Everything is in flux. And the left has gone so extreme to the left that what they call, you know, far right today would have been like JFK Democrats, or the, you know, that kind of left-wing politics of the 60s and 70s. That's now considered right-wing. And that's not sustainable. That is not sustainable. They're pushing the margins and demarcation lines out and out and out to the point where they'll make themselves irrelevant. And it's already beginning. While it may seem they have tremendous power through things like university campuses and college professors, and they have the ear of the media, you have to remember, too, that the media doesn't have the same – a lot of the times we give media more power than it does. Like, I go out – like, none of my friends are involved in anything to do with alternative anything. They're just regular people I play music with or hang out with. And they don't pay attention to that stuff. Their lives go on. They still exist outside it. It's when you go into what we do and we look online and we look at certain news and certain behaviors or certain news stories, we get the impression that that stuff is far more powerful than it is. It's not. It's very much a big emperor's new clothes thing going on there. And I also think it's also self-destructive. I'll give you an example. How the hell can gay and lesbian people support Iran? This is a country where they, if you're even suspected of being gay, they hang you by a construction crane in the middle of the street, and your parents are forced to watch as you die. And yet, just because Trump has a problem with Iran, these people are now, who would, if they were there, they'd be dead within hours due to the extreme Sharia law that exists there. And yet they're the first ones to jump in there. That's not sustainable. That's hysteria. That's mental illness. That's not anything that can hold for long. That's not something that, like Marcus Aurelius, will be quoted in 2,000 years or so in the future. And remember, we're playing for, it's a long-term game. Yeah, it seems like that now, but I mean, nothing lasts forever. Fascism didn't last forever. The Third Reich didn't last forever. The Soviet Union didn't last forever. Eventually, anything that's artificial in the sense that it's not authentic with the soul of humans will always fall apart, regardless of how totalitarian or not the regime behind it becomes.
And the more totalitarian it is, the more all-powerful it is, the more the rest of the world begins to look at it as a threat and feel like we need to take this out. That's just something I've noticed, you know, in history. Look at Rome. It never stopped growing. And then, of course, it never stopped having battles and weakening borders. And eventually it began to fail because, really, there is no being all-powerful in this world. There's just too many other people, too many other countries.
Rome was a different thing. Rome was destroyed by Christianity. That's what really destroyed Rome. Rome's power was definitely destroyed by Christianity. You cannot even doubt that. The empire was managing fine, yet there was problems in certain regions, but it was still a strong, powerful empire until Constantine decided on his deathbed, you know, after he'd boiled his wife alive in a bathtub, that we're all going to become Christians. And you can definitely see the split happening after that. The Eastern Western Empire, they're falling apart because basically what had made Rome great was this classical pagan undercurrent of philosophy and tolerance, I might add. The Romans didn't care what religion you preached as long as you paid your taxes and didn't attack Rome. When Christianity took over, its primary purpose was, and later becoming the Vatican, was to wipe out anything that wasn't Christian. And this led directly to the death of Rome, because it, or the death of the empire until it became the Vatican, because it literally divided itself among itself. It became its own witch hunter. And this is the problem with Rome. So Rome probably would have lasted. Now remember, it even as a Christian empire, it lasted till the 1500s in, you know, various guises. But it probably would have lasted for another 2,000 years if it wasn't for that. Christianity became a virus, almost like a computer virus in the soul of the Roman structures that really took it apart. And that's another thing we have to be careful of is that, you know, religion is dangerous. It's, and especially evangelical religion. And one of the things that does worry me the most about America in particular is because if those SJWs and all those woke progressives get, if there's a backlash against them, let's hope it's not a fundamentalist Baptist Southern Christian backlash against them, because that would be just as bad in the other direction.
No, I agree. I've never liked the demonization of either side. And that's something that we're, you know, seeing now here in the country is definitely a demonization of the left. And you know, it's the same as when George W. Bush was president. I didn't like the extreme demonization of the right, because they're just, it's just this great big good cop, bad cop nonsense routine. Both parties are in many ways the same, really. They work for the same masters. And whenever you get that real extreme hate going in one direction or the other, it never ends well. And that's why I have to admit, I am glad there is a Trump, because truly he is neither. And that kind of breaks that rhythm. And I thought before, as we move on, if you can see that picture, I sent it to you. You'll see if you see it. Along with Marxism and socialism, you know, being something that's so 20th century, kicked to the curve, and I like your take on it, because I think right here in this country, it's something that we're really feeling is those two butting heads, and it would be great if the, really, it's not a matter of left or right. There's something deeper. Whatever demons that socialism comes from, I feel like during, you could say, the Obama years, nothing against him personally, but during that time, it seems like those demons were awoken, the demons of socialism. You know, it's kind of like you mentioned in your book *Walpurgis Night*, some of the ancient you know, gods of war for the Germanic people were awoken by the Third Reich, and it seems like something just as nasty was awoken here until Trump came along. Does that sound possible?
It sounds very possible. Remember, these, we don't know what, when you use terms like demons or whatever, dark forces, we don't fully know what these things are. Are they external to us? Are they, you know, dynamics of the consciousness expressed in certain ways? But absolutely, I mean, if you look at the history of Marxism, it's absolutely terrifying and appalling. I can't think of anything benevolent in it. Even when you talk about like Marxist nations like Sweden, they may be wealthy and everything, but when you go there, there's tremendous social control. It's just like they're very unhappy societies. They're just not happy. They may pretend they're happy, but it's like the government says we're happy, so we should smile. That's literally what it's like there. I'm not aware of any socialist society or Marxist society that has been any good for human development as people, because ultimately it's a mechanism for the construction of a machine that serves the state, and the human is just another aspect within it, like capital and labor. There's no special consideration given to the human, and this is why it leads to things like genocide, whether it's National Socialism or Bolshevik Socialism. It will lead to that, because the human is eventually dehumanized to the point where it's only seen as a surplus or a requirement. And when there's a surplus of labor, well, then you kill it off. And that's literally what has happened in every Marxist society. And that's a demonic thing as well. Like when you think about it, it's like, you know, well, not, you know, in that sense, in the pathological sense. Yeah, I think there's, you know, it's absolutely dark forces behind this. I'd be the one to incline that, it'd be inclined to believe that humans are like are basically, I wouldn't say the force of good, but the force of survival against these things. And many things we do as cultures and societies are to detaches from these ancient and unknown forces that lay behind the shadows that seem to want to do us harm through things like political and religious dogma.
Yes, absolutely. And definitely recommend people to read Valpurgis Night, an amazing book by Thomas Sheridan. And it might, I don't know, I think it can give some insight on today's politics or hopefully today's politics that are coming to pass. Just the what happened in Germany can happen here when we awaken the old dark forces. That's just my take on it. Well, before we move on from that topic, yeah, I sent you a picture. You might see it. But in Washington State, there was like 7 new gun control laws signed. And along with the socialism, Marxism, and extreme left-wing politics coming to a close in the 20th century, 21st, moving on without that, which would be wonderful, something I'm seeing where we see things coming to a head in a real battle right now is the left, the extreme, truly going all out in some states to, more than I have ever seen, disarm the public. I mean, to a point of, I mean, just temper tantrums. They don't want an armed populace. And to me, that kind of sparks my psychic weather feelings, because I go, what is up with that exactly? Because like this one picture that I sent, and I'll link to this article in the show notes, but you see the governor signing this, all these, you know, new gun laws, and you see this crowd of people behind him, and they're all barren. I mean, the men aren't even soy boys. They're not. You can't even compare them to men. And the women, oh my gosh, they're barren, emptiness. And so it's funny, but it just seems that we have, especially in state politics, states that have big cities, it just seems like that's like the last holdout of the socialism. And it seems like they really are desiring to, I mean, screw the Constitution, they don't care. They're going all out to disarm people to an extreme. It's almost worrisome. But what psychic weather do you feel around that? Because I just feel this is like, it's big, but I do feel like maybe the left is setting themselves up for a huge fall. The dark forces, I'll call them, they're not going to disarm us. It's a big deal in America.
Yeah, I mean, that's an American issue, really, the Second Amendment and gun rights and everything. I know I lived there for years, so I know how contentious it is. It's always been going on, even when I was there years and years ago. There was always things about they were trying to disarm people and this kind of thing. We saw that. I mean, when you want to talk about a message from the subconscious, then we have this shooter who tried to kill these people in a church. I think it was in Texas or somewhere. And a congregation who was a firing instructor guy got up from the pews and shot him dead with one shot, probably saved numerous lives there. And it turned out that other people in the church were armed as well, so he wouldn't have got very far if he had to start killing people. And, you know, so that was almost like, where did that come from? Was that risen up from the subconscious as well? A high profile thing like that everyone saw that, you know, there's two sides to that story. And the thing with the guns in America is it was central to your founding as a state, as a nation, and it's part of your identity. And it is almost like they'll always go for the thing. The lefties will always go for the thing, and I'm not right-wing, by the way. If anyone's listening to this, I am as far from right-wing as you can get. I was probably an old-fashioned lefty, you know, a sane one. And the right-wing, you know, the left-wing, it seems to be everywhere going for the biggest thing. The, you know, Extinction Rebellion. They don't want anyone leaving home, or they want everyone, you know, basically rated according to carbon. Here in Ireland, in fact, a very similar thing to America is that they recently want to honor the British death squads. This is not a joke. The Irish government attempted recently to honor the British military death squads that were part of the Irish War of Independence. It'd be like the Jews commemorating the SS's great work. And it backlashed huge here. The government had to basically cancel it. And they're looking at being wiped out in the next election. And that's not because people are nationalists. It was just like, hold on a second. What's next? You're going to tell us we're not Irish? This kind of thing? Or that we're something else? And it's, you know, so they do push it. you'll find that these, and we've an extreme left-wing government here at the moment, and you do find that they do push it far further than they should. Like we were saying about the lefties, like the SJWs, and how they scream and shout, and they seem to be, they lack a kind of a personality construct. I've always noticed that with people drawn to Marxist and socialist politics. It's almost like they're not alive. They don't have a soul. And the dogma of the Marxist ideology becomes the soul within them. If they're challenged by something that they cannot, you know, use their Marxist ideology to get out of, they start to have psychiatric episodes, screaming, shouting, shaving their hair off, dyeing it different colors, massive body piercings and tattoos for no particular reason. And I think that's basically, I mean, if you were to ask me, I would say that in its essential form, Marxism is a mental illness. Now, I wouldn't say that all left-wing people or socialist people are mentally ill. I think there was some good things definitely came out of socialism in terms of protecting workers' rights and trade unions in the early days. But then again, that went out of control as well. But I would say that basically anyone who's an ism is someone who's lacking a soul on many levels, I think.
No, that very much makes sense. And I did spend a good number of years living in Seattle, Washington, which is an extremely lefty area. And that's something I had to summarize, was that, yeah, people lacked life there because there was a lot of generational socialism, I would call it, there. And I had a lot of empathy for people because, yes, the extreme, I call them the Whole Foods voters, basically. They were sadly not alive. And you could feel that, you could see the suffering that they were suffering. They were suffering because they didn't have an experience of life. So therefore, they didn't even know what it was for. They were just sort of alive and angry. And it does seem like a mental illness is a good word for it, but also it's just, it's a lack of the experience of life. So therefore, you don't even know what you're missing. It seems like the ultimate goal of socialism is to have one have no concept of what the experience of life is. So therefore, what do they have to lose? You know, they've never been alive.
Have you noticed that the more affluent the person is, the more likely they are to be a socialist?
Yes, and I noticed
Socialism was set up basically for the working class to give them a voice. The factory worker, the miner, the farmer. And who are all the socialists now? People who are earning, you know, mid-range six figures and have never had a day of hardship in their lives, and they want to overthrow the state.
Yeah, and it's tough because, you know, I know extremely good people who, let's say, believe in Extinction Rebellion or they believe in, you know, Greta. Like, they're not necessarily dead. They're experiencing life, but yet they've fallen for it, and some of them are celebrities. And in a sense, it's because once they find that celebrity status, now you are, you know, wholly in our culture. You are now a celebrity. People have cameras on you. It just seems like they are so surrounded with the reality bubble of socialism, and that, you know, Greta is a great leader and so brave and all this, that really they can't see the forest for the trees. They are surrounded by an opinion that really, if they were to break from, that they would be cast out. So they actually begin to lose their identity.
Well, there's a great example of observing the psychic weather, that you observe the behavior in these people towards this 17-year-old Swedish girl, and their behavior, their reaction towards her is, and how they are and how their lives are and how they exist. You're only capable of seeing this if you're on the outside. And that's why the ultimate thing, if you want to understand the psychic weather, is not to take teams, not to join sides, and sit in the middle, and then you observe, and then you are capable of seeing how to survive properly.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned Greta, and that's a great one to talk about briefly here, because you did mention her, Aaron. You did mention her in a psychic weather report, and I got to throw in before we go into that. One thing about today that I see as far as psychic weather is the power of memes. I mean, memes to me seem to be ramping up. They're getting more powerful. Did you hear that one meme where somebody put up signs saying Islam is right about women?
Yeah.
I mean, that That is the power of memes, because that caused people to break down. They could not function. I mean, that was like your computer blue screening hanging up and it won't even reboot. People were broken by that.
Memes is chaos magic. The memes is the chaos magic of the 70s and the 80s has come of age. Anyone who had an interest in the chaos magic scene from those days was always waiting for something like this to come along. The point where we're, you remember now, it's very little text and a lot of image, but mostly where a meme takes place is its completion happens in your mind. It's you who are the arbiter of the message ultimately. And I'll have to say one of the greatest things in my life was to have lived long enough to see memes become as powerful as they are, to the point where I see people from the chaos magic scene and the Discordia scene who are afraid of memes, and they're because they're all like, you know, they all feel they have to be left wing and everything progressive and woke, and they associate the memes with the left wing, and the reason is, or sorry, the right wing, and the reason is that adage of the left can't meme is absolutely true. They can't. They cannot meme. It's because you can actually see the lack of soul right there. You need a strong psyche in order to both create and understand the conventions of a very clever meme. And you see how you see the left's attempts at memes, and they're absolutely pathetic. They're bizarre, and yet you get these right-wing kids, or kids who are basically not even right-wing. They're probably just like anti-Hillary Clinton and anti-SJWs, and they have these remarkable powers of sorcery in terms of delivering these memes. We live in an age of real magic with the memes, and they're becoming more powerful. Well, they've been powerful now for a while. They got Trump elected, basically. I mean, I think one of the ones that I saw from before the Trump election was a picture of a woman talking to her son, and she was saying, "I don't care if you die in a war. We need a woman president." And I thought that was genius. And another one I can remember seeing was a picture of a father with like multicolored rainbow hair, angry with his daughter, who was about 4 or 5, and he'd be saying things like, "Why haven't you had a sex change yet, you fascist?" And these say more than all the philosophies. It is one of the things, if you look at people who are philosophically socialist, I don't know how it is in America, but I'm talking about here, I've known people who are members of the Socialist Workers' Party, and a huge amount of what they do is philosophically driven in terms of reading. So they're told to read this book by Trotsky, or this book by Engels, or this book on all kinds of things. And they go back and then they discuss it. Everything is philosophically driven. And it's all about, you know, well, how does this relate to page, you know, 204, paragraph 5 of Das Kapital, this kind of thing. And it's not conducive to spontaneity and spontaneous thinking.
Absolutely.
It's very much a cult thing. Very much a cold thing. And people who get and understand the meme have broken out of the cult mindset.
Absolutely. It's like a meme or a cartoon. I think about, you know, political cartoons. They always say more when you're reading, you know, the newspaper, or you're scrolling through Facebook or something. The political cartoons always say more than endless text can. The cartoon can just nail it where words, they kind of fail. A picture's worth a million, you know, 1,000 words, but a meme is worth a million, I guess. And it does seem like a meme is really, could it be called a sigil? Because to me, a meme is like the sword of truth that cuts as deeply as your delusion.
Very beautifully stated. It's very bardic as well. The bard was incredibly powerful in ancient societies, right up until the Middle Ages, or the Renaissance even. The bard could write a song, write a poem, write a riddle that could demolish an empire, a kingdom. And this is the power of the bard, the jester. This is coming through the meme. The memes are very, very bardic. And also in terms of, like you said, like a sigil, yeah, they do compress the whole identity of something into a specific shape. into a specific set of graphics and text in a very powerful way. It's launched off on its own. I mean, again, yeah, it's chaos magic. That's the end of it.
And it's powerful. So it's almost like, well, with Diana showing up there, you know, surfacing in the water, I mean, maybe the Excalibur has come back, and it's the sword of meme writing. So life is magical when you view it that way, for sure. Well, you mentioned in A Psychic Weather Report, you did talk about Extinction Rebellion and then mass suicides for Greta. And I think that it's something I wanted to touch on, because I think it's very relevant, because when you said that, I really saw it happening. I thought, you know, this is actually accurate. And so do you still feel the same way about that Psychic Weather Report? And I'll link to it in the show notes. It was very powerful, and I sadly think that will happen. How are you feeling about that now? There actually being people who are so, well, sad, so unattached to life that they just end it for Greta.
Oh, yeah, Carbon Jonestown. Oh, I think that's definitely on the cards. I think it's probably happened in many cases, and we haven't been told about it. It was just been classified as a suicide. They don't report the, you know, most suicides are never reported. The family may see a note or something like that, but it doesn't go out in the newspapers that someone killed themselves because of this reason or that reason. It rarely goes out. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure they've already happened. The thing that frightens me the most of all are these, like, you know, sanctimonious, woke, middle-class parents who will actually kill their own children and wives, or just, you know, do a kind of like a Magda and Joseph Goebbels thing and kill all their kids and then kill themselves. Because, I mean, during the Extinction Rebellion march in London, there was this one particular lunatic who was under the wheels of a car, and he was holding a photograph of his kids and crying. Someone like him is someone that I would have immediately found out who he was and then get the social services down to see if the kids are safe. I mean, it's also a way for these superficial sanctimonious ones to be a hero. I killed my family to save the planet. You will get those types. They will happen. You know, if you read, I read, you know, the Guyana Jonestown book, the original one, that a film was made of at Powers Booth. Yeah, there was ones that, you know, went up to take the Kool-Aid, who were moaning and crying and this kind of thing. But for every one of them, there was four or five more per one of them who was running up with his wife and kids saying, I'll do it. Oh, I can't, look what I did. I killed my family for you, Mr. Jones. And those types are in very much in the, you know, I'll kill you for Greta. You have we've already got reports of suicidal teenagers locked in a room who think they're going to die in, you know, within 20 years, because the climate is, you know, is doomed. The planet's doomed. This is, again, a very Christian thing. It's the whole, you know, judgment day, end times thing coming around again in that psychosis. You know, the Messiah is Greta. The judgment day will be the, you know, the end of the planet. It appeals to that very powerful program that was written into people in the West. And oh yeah, more than ever, I believe in that. I'll give you another one. I think a lot of these SJWs who don't do that will convert to Islam. I think a lot of these types will convert to Islam. A lot of these, like, college students you see now, the purple hair and the multiple piercings who boast about the amount of abortions they have, they will. You're going to have a middle class suburban white version of the Nation of Islam. You it's just coming. You're going to have a socialist Louis Farrakhan, and you will see a lot of these SJWs. That's another one. That's a prediction I'm going to make right here and now. They're going to convert to Islam. That's what's going to happen, as well as the suicides. It's definitely coming, unless, and I say this, we can get to them before we can mock and ridicule and undo the climate hysteria before these people are driven to that point. If we can get that out there first, de-Al Gore the world, we can actually save those people.
And I think that's beginning to emerge a bit, because people are learning about space weather. We've interviewed a lot of people about that on this show, is that, you know, the climate being affected just by, well, for one thing, the sun. And it's funny how that is denied. There's always a lot of science that is, well, kind of shaky at best, that is said to be absolute fact via the mainstream media. But then, of course, any science that has validity that just doesn't agree or even expounds upon what affects climate just becomes, well, they want you thrown in jail. So that's a real psychic weather thing to me also, is to see just past that extreme narrative, that absoluteness, that if you differ from this opinion, then, well, you should be thrown in jail and you're bad and you're evil. And so that's what I hope, is that people continue to, let's say, wake up and just start maybe having their own personal psychic weather and just realizing, wait a second, this is like someone just threw a great big log in the lake and I see all these ripples. I mean, there's something to this. This has disturbed like the fabric of reality, this huge explosion of you must think this or go to the gulag.
Yeah, the Orwellian thing. Yeah, it's full of that stuff. I mean, we're gaslighted constantly. A big ball of fire in the sky, and we're told that has nothing to do with our climate. You know, this is what we're dealing with. It's that insane. And it's people will accept it because people want to believe that they are appeasing their leaders, that whoever holds control in society, that they appease them. And they're ultimately useless idiots because they're only being used enough to get the agenda passed and then they're ignored or destroyed.
And it seems like a place where I've seen that reality, unfortunately, is around Trump. What I mean is, he's definitely a ripple in the fabric of reality, and I'm going to say a positive one. And what no one seems to get is, or well, many people do not get. Many people get it, many people do not. But that if everybody that you know is evil does not like somebody, maybe it might make you want to look at them a little deeper. I mean, you've got the Senate, you've got the House, you've got the mainstream media, you've got globalists, you've got all these people who don't like him and want to get rid of him, but yet you'll still have people who, that just goes right over their head. Like, everyone you know that is evil hates this person, yet you hate them too. And that just seems like what I call it, just multiple choice education by a generation by generation by generation, where all you believe in is the right and the wrong answer, and you can't see past that. And to me, a great thing that psychic weather reports are helping people with is to see past simply a right or a wrong, an absolute right and an absolute evil, but see that maybe there's something behind that. There seems to be, especially on the extreme left right now in our country, there's a lack of finesse, of ability to see things from multiple angles, from multiple points of view, ultimately multidimensionally. There's just absolute right and absolute evil, and there's absolutely no finesse, no Aikido, basically.
Well, you know, life is the gray. If you were to if you try to live your life in extremes, you will be destroyed. It's as simple as that. You have, you know, it's all about a flexibility, and you know, there's no one, you know, to say someone is ultimately bad or ultimately good can never be right, or I'm always in the right and they're always in the wrong. That's not a sustainable way to live. You will eventually have an eruption of the shadow from beneath you. It's always about meeting at the gray areas. You know, the demarcation lines are, you know, they're fences in the mind, but they will also, you know, corral you into destructive behavior. So the psychic weather thing was always my way of saying to people, like, it's not black and white. It's shades of gray. And to find that mid-gray tone as best you can. Try to find that equilibrium of psyche. Try to find that balance in everything around you, rather than allowing yourself to be pulled along. You know, follow your good feeling, but don't make instant decisions. Things change over time. You change over time. The world changes over time, because just like there's a psychic weather, there's a psychic climate. That this is a part of a much bigger thing. And therefore, that was the idea of the psychic climate thing, was like, just put the brakes on and observe and then think about it. And you'll find that suddenly you will not have an emotional attachment to either one side or the other. And you start to developing emotional attachment towards your own intuition. And I think that's ultimately, you know, what I'm trying to help people do.
And it is working. And so we've had you for about 54 minutes. I think we can, I just have another question or two that I'd like to throw your way. And I think we can wrap up and not keep you all night. I know it's late over there. In a video you did, a YouTube, called Get Off the Chessboard, one that always really spoke to me, I think it's very, very powerful. Two things you mentioned was to wait for a great awakening among the masses is an elegant form of suicide. And I think that's very true. And you also mentioned at the end of that, that utopia is you spending your life surrounded by the people and things you love and embarking on a path of creation that makes your life and the world a little better.
Yeah.
And that is powerful. And something I'm seeing, I think hopefully coming to an end in as the 20th century passes, is people trying to change the world. A line you put in there somewhere, and I don't see it in my notes now, but you said that reality is not so bad. The world is not so bad when you disengage from it. You know, when you allow yourself to see it more clearly. And it does seem that really, if we look at the world, when you get over this utopian vision, this like, ultimately, people just want it to be the way they want it to be, and every dictator has wanted that. Well, how do you think we'll move forth in the 21st century? Do you think we're going to continue trying to make the world the way we want it, waiting for that great awakening, which is the subtle form of suicide? And I mean, are we going to kind of break free from that and allow ourselves to have a little bit of utopia in our own garden?
I think both. I think, well, the transhumanist thing and the AI thing will be very dominant in the next 50 years or so. But there'll always be people who won't want a part of that. There'll always be people doing their own thing, and there'll always be the maverick. The maverick will always exist. The maverick will always be out there. And I would just say to people, be a maverick, be controversial.
And it's like the I think, I do have a note here that says, witness but don't get absorbed. And so,
That's exactly it. Observation with detachment, it's a very powerful thing. It's common in Eastern philosophy, very much so. And I, you know, you get it in Buddhism and Taoism, the idea that you are in it, but not of it, this kind of thing. And I think that's a great way to live, a great way to exist, and to do it. I mean, look, the world could be a shithole in 20 years. It could be a lot better in 20 years. Don't be spending your life now waiting to see if it becomes a shithole or a utopia. Enjoy it in the meantime.
It's like Carlos Castaneda wrote, I think it's in Tales of Power. He kind of says that, he goes, don't see things as right or wrong. Don't see them so much as good or bad. Just look at your own challenges in life and then take those on heroically. And when it comes to the things of the world, these issues that are not yours to control, he mentions the warrior does not indulge. Don't indulge in these things that you are asked to give your power away to, basically.
I couldn't improve on that.
Well, as we wrap up, one thing I wanted to ask you about is, so, you know, previous world wars and, well, smaller wars also, ultimately being a culling of the population that you mentioned in your videos, which to me is very correct, you know. I think, you know, if a person studies a little bit of history, they will find that to be the case. We got too many people, let's kill a bunch. And then make money doing it. So with that said, what I'm seeing right now, and I hope that this is something, I feel this in the psychic weather, so I'll just run this by you, is that I think one of the things that is a battle here between the, I'm just going to call it the radical left. I don't want to say people who are left wing, because there's,
I think that's fair.
Yeah, if you're a liberal Democrat, like a progressive, the old school progressive Democrat, that's a whole different story. But the extreme left right now, which is unhinged, which I think is what like the right was back when we had George W. Bush. Dark powers just take over a party, and that's why I wish people would have a little bit of grace and just realize that right now, as the right has been in the past, the left has been taken over. So with that said, what I'm seeing, and I hope that the socialism and the Marxism and the hardcore, you know, dark forces that have been awakened, I hope they are put back to bed, and I hope we do move towards a better future. But what I'm seeing that I hope gets done away with as we move into the 21st century, that I see in my 2020 psychic weather, is there's been an attempt at the culling of wildness. And we see a lot of people who are moving towards, well, paganism and also music, like Heelung, amazing band, like if you've heard of them, and also writings like Iron John by Robert Bly. I'm seeing, including the millennial generation, moving into wanting to be wild. They don't want their wildness culled. And I think if the left, this extreme radical left, is put to bed and those demons are put back in hell where they belong, into the darkness, that we won't see that culling of wildness in the 24th century. And we'll start to get back to our badass neo-Aboriginal roots. How does that vibe with you?
Yeah, it's like, you know, Thoreau's Walden. It's almost like we're now in the digital Walden. It's like, I noticed that's one of the things that will exacerbate that wildness is the internet. I was just talking there the other night how the internet is basically crap now, where 20 years ago, 15 years ago, there were thousands and thousands of odd and strange little sites. Now they're all gone. They're all vanished. GeoCities and sites are all gone. It doesn't matter what search engine you use. All the little quirkiness of the internet is gone. So people, like you were saying, with music, they're gone. You know, they will return to things that are in the flesh, reading books, art, creativity, music, this kind of thing. You will have a, you know, what they always say is that all societies are born. It was a, I don't know who said this, but all societies are born stoic and they die Epicurean. And I think there's a lot of the Epicurean thing of Facebook and social media is now finished or coming to its end in the next 4 or 5 years. And you're going to see people return to a more kind of a traditional way of doing things. I've moved into making films more and more because I enjoy the process of it. I've taken a deep interest in it. And also because I find I can express things like my writing with a visual imagery quite well. I made a documentary recently on H.P. Lovecraft, and that was a great, a wonderful thing for me. It was, I had a beautiful time making it, and it fulfilled all my creative needs. And I think that's where we're going forward. I think people are going to get more creative. And as you said, they'll be wild in their creativity. They won't be writing blogs. They'll be writing books. They won't be, you know, playing video games online. They'll be making music, or they'll be doing out in the woods and stuff like that. I definitely see that growing. I concur completely with your wildness theory.
Right now, we are selling more records than CDs. And I think that's very telling of that, too. I mean, people want the analog and not the digital experience of life. Well, it's been amazing having you on the show. I'm so glad we got to catch up again. This is so great. I really encourage our listeners to listen to Thomas Sheridan's Psychic Weather Reports. And as we sign off, is there anything you wanted to mention, Thomas Sheridan? And where can people get a hold of your latest work, what you're putting out these days?
My main website is www.mossuponstones.com. My two YouTube channels that I use mostly for all this kind of stuff is Beyond Room 313 is one channel, and the other channel is Open Source Occult TV, is where I put the vlogs on the Psychic Weather Report. And I don't really have much planned for this year. It's kind of like late. I had an amazing year last year. I traveled all over the world and, you know, just did some incredible things. I don't know if that's going to happen this year. Probably not, but I'm in the process of working on a book on H.P. Lovecraft that I've been thinking about for years, and expanding on the narration I wrote for the documentary. And that's basically it. I'm just having a good time hanging out with my mates and, you know, having a laugh. And like you said, I'm finding my own little wildness.
You are listening to Radiant Creators, a collaborative project composed of people whose passion, purpose, and dedication requires forging their own unique path of empowerment and livelihood. A radiant creator isn't making a living, they are living.